Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Let's take a look. This is some of the pieces in this docuseries, which, by the way, again, it's on Max, HBO Max, and Investigation Discovery right now. This is her talking about the car ride and really what happened from her perspective. As she said, this is her testimony of what happened, and she's wanting to get her side out, and so let's hear it. This is now what she says, how that all went down that evening. Let's take a look.
I'm driving, and John got on the phone with Jen, and he's telling me it's 34 Fairview. And we arrive at 34 Fairview. It didn't look like there was any soiree going on. It didn't look inviting. The outside was dark, and I didn't see any familiar-looking vehicles. And I said, John, can you make sure we're welcome? He said, I'll run in. So when John got out of the car at Brian Albert's house, he took my full vodka soda, which is sitting in the cup holder. And he walked up the driveway, and John always walked, kind of skipped and walked at the same time. He was always in a rush. And I saw him reach the breezeway door, which is the side front door. And he opened the door and went to walk in. And I waited probably a minute, and he doesn't come. And it only took like 2 or 3 minutes for me to be irritated. So I called him. I didn't want to wait for him to respond to a text, and he didn't answer. I said, you've got to be kidding me. What are you doing? You just went in and I'm sitting here. Either we're welcome or we're not, but it shouldn't take you 5 minutes to determine that. And then about 10 minutes went by, and I left, and I was not happy.
John, you are using me right now. You're a loser. Yourself.
And little did I know, John was not getting my phone calls. And then that was it. The last I ever talked to him was when he got out of my car at Brian Albert's house.
So that's that version of events. That's her current version, where it's very polished. Here's what happened. I remember everything. We'll hear another version of events from Karen in just a moment, which are a lot more confused and convoluted and not so assured. What was your take on what we just saw?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were so many odd things about it. I mean, first off, we have vodka in the car, right? Driving around with the open drink.
That's appropriate,
so
yeah.
There's quite a bit that can be discussed about alcohol and the role of alcohol in this. But the other thing that is confusing is if he says, I'll be right back out, and he doesn't come out, then why doesn't she get out and go knock on the door and say, hey, are you in there? Are things okay? What's going on? Rather than immediately going to these angry, verbally abusive phone calls that then go on for hours.
I have a thought on that. Hear me out here for a second, but I'm not diagnosing her. You can't diagnose her. Nobody can diagnose her unless you're in the correct setting to do so. But there is a lot of narcissistic behavior with Karen Reed that I think she's demonstrated here. And a lot of times when they lash out and they freak out, and I think we could take what we heard in those phone calls, and that's just a small percentage of the voicemails that were actually played. They go on. You could listen to them for quite a while. I think it was like, what, 40, 50 some of them that night?
50 some.
It was an insane amount of like, oh my God, how many times are you going to do this and just say horrible things? There's a lot of projecting that goes on where they will project what they may be shameful of, what they may be doing onto the other. And she didn't want to go in that house because the guy that she's been flirting with, the guy she saw earlier at the bar that night, who also texted her and said, you know, what's up? You know, that he's there with John and they've been flirting and they actually had already kissed. It's not, again, not a life or death thing here, but maybe a little embarrassment going into the house party where the guy is that you've been, which she just said, flirting with for 2 or 3 weeks. I think that may be why she didn't go into the house and then left all those hateful voicemails of he's cheating on me. Is this and that and everything. It's like when you're actually the one, Karen, who's been very much up to that. Does that seem to make a little more sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that certainly could fit the scenario because the level of rage that she displayed in those phone calls, it's another side of her that she never does really explain. Why was she calling him a pervert over and over? I mean, implying that in there having sex with someone while she's sitting out in the car. I mean, it's definitely odd. And that also gets into the level of intoxication, you know, that she was completely drunk and out of control.
Which could, very much explain a lot of it. I just think the projection angle, especially like right there at that moment in time when there's this insecure feeling of, is he cheating on me? She's obviously fairly paranoid about this. And I have no idea in their history if he cheated on her or she cheated on him or whatever. All we have is evidence that she was flirting with somebody else. But to immediately go down such a vitriolic road of, I hate you, you pervert, you da-da-da-da-da-da, seems a bit extreme. So that was her saying, you know, how sure she is that she did not hit him. And there's another place where I know she says that as well. Here's also her talking about not remembering even dropping her off or not even dropping him off. Because initially her reaction when she calls Jen McCabe that morning, trying to figure out what is going on, is that she left him at the waterfall bar. She didn't have any recollection of even going to the house. So how she knows that she stood there and watched him go in and waited this time and this and that and had all these thoughts. I don't know how you pull that out of being blackout drunk. We'll talk about that in a moment, but here's her other version of events.
I started calling all his friends and nobody had heard from him. Nobody had seen him. And then I called Jen McCabe at 4:53. And I said, I'm looking for John.
She proceeds to scream my name multiple times. And she tells me that John didn't come home. They got into a fight and that she left him at the waterfall. And I say, Karen, we saw you outside of my sister's.
And what was her response to that?
She told me that she didn't remember going there. And then she started yelling, Jen, Jen. And then she was saying, did I hit him? Could I have hit him?
And this is while you're still in your home and you're in your bedroom, correct?
Correct. And then she proceeded to say that she had a cracked taillight.
Karen made dozens of calls that morning. Not one to 911. If one of those calls went to 911, Johnny might still be alive. It's upsetting to think that's true.
So Jen says, you're hysterical, come pick me up, and I'll go look for John with you. And I'm simultaneously calling Carrie Roberts. Carrie wasn't at the bar or at Fairview, but she was a friend of John's and had known John for a long time and communicated with him all the time.
Karen called me at 5:00 in the morning. I answered the phone, and she said, John's dead. Carrie, and then she hung up.
I may have said to Carrie, I'm worried he's dead or something, but I didn't say unequivocally in a declarative statement, Carrie, John's dead. And if I had killed him, why would I be saying that? It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
reminds me of like a petulant teenager. Mm-hmm. It's just not right, Dad. It has a weird feel to it. And yes, it actually does make a lot of sense, Jen or Karen, because you were still drunk. You're confused right. as hell. So yes, it does make a lot of sense. You probably said every variation of that sentence from I hit him, did I hit him, could I have hit him, would I have hit him, why would I have hit him, how did I not know I hit him, everything.
Right.
What was your take on that?
Yeah, the degree to which alcohol played a part in this can't be overstated, because I don't think she had any clue what was really going on, had her worst fears. Is he dead? Did I hit him? Might I have hit him? Did she leave him at the waterfall? Did she have any recollection of being at the Albert's house outside? You know, 100-pound woman, I don't know her weight, obviously, mm-hmm. but she's tiny. So if she's in the vicinity of 100 pounds, it only takes 3 to 4 drinks within a few hours to be having memory impairment. And when you have enough alcohol, the hippocampus, which is the part of the brain that stores memories, involved in retrieving memories as well, that stops working. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people will go into what we can call a brownout, where they have memory fragments, but they don't have a cohesive sense of what happened during a particular period of time. A blackout is when they lose all memories for a chunk of time. And I'm convinced that at the very least, she was in a brownout episode and very likely was in a full blackout. Because the other thing people don't understand about being in a blackout or a brownout is the person may not appear to be intoxicated. They may not be slurring. They may be able to drive, not well, but they can drive. They may be out dancing, having conversation. And so other people don't realize the degree of intoxication that they're experiencing.
Can any of those memories come back after some point in time? And I get at the beginning here, she's like, what happened? Can any of those things resurface, either by just naturally it kind of comes back to you, seeing the same setting again, kind of triggering it through suggestion that, yeah, you were here, remember? Because McCabe says you were at my front yard in your vehicle, Jen. You didn't leave him at the waterfall. Can that trigger a memory back to then get her to go, oh, yeah, I was. And then she's seeing more of that? Or is that just suggestion at some point?
That's great question. And really hard to sort out what might be a memory fragment that a person can retrieve, because we do know when the hippocampus stops working, it's not working. So is it possible to get a fragment back? Maybe, maybe not. But we also know that the brain, as we talk so often about, the brain's ability to create stories based upon suggestion and based upon hearing a narrative from someone else. No, this is what you did. This is what happened. People can start to remember it that way. And so that's another thing that we have to think about here. When she says she remembers seeing him go up to the door, maybe that's just the story that she believes at this point. And in that way, her brain is supplying her with a visual image of something that maybe is not what actually happened.
Yeah, I mean, and there was, like, I'm not here to be on the side of either side, because I think there's shadiness going on in both places. But they interviewed everyone who was in the house that night, on the stand, kids included. Did anyone ever see John O'Keefe come into the house? Absolutely, unequivocally, the answer is no. I know the argument is, well, maybe he went to the basement and everybody just didn't see him, so they are being honest. Okay, but again, and I'm not arguing that Karen even hit him at all. No. I am arguing, how does she even know? How could she have this strong of recollection of that night when we have all these other contradictory moments in statements, even current day, where she still talks about being unsure of it, and then in the next breath talks about being very sure of it. Yeah. At the end of the day, I don't think she's capable of knowing, and not because she doesn't want to, but it's just not there. Here's another version of the story from the documentary.
I knew that morning that my tail light was broken, but I have no memory of a 200-pound man hitting my car in any way. And My memory is not as sharp when I drink as it is when I don't. But I don't black out. I don't wake up and say I can't remember anything from the night before. So there's no part of me that thinks I hit John. I know I didn't hit John.
Very very convinced that she didn't hit John at this point in time, because she doesn't black out. Remember, that's something that right. She's incapable. Isn't anyone capable of blacking out if you have enough alcohol in your system? And what was her count that night? I don't have it in front of me, but I believe it was pretty high.
Yeah, nine drinks.
Yeah.
She disputes that she drank all nine drinks. She estimated it was mm-hmm. closer to six drinks. That's still well beyond the four drinks that would put a person of her size into a blackout state.
And you're not going to always know. It's not like when if you get into a blackout state or you don't remember something from a night of drinking, it's not like you're going, okay, right now the blackout begins.
Right.
It's not a countdown clock that goes, okay, I'm not going to remember anything. It just kind of happens depending on your brain and your age and how you metabolize alcohol and all of that. And yeah, I'll tell you what, being in my 40s, it's a lot different than it was in my 20s.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you just don't know, Karen. It's not a, you know, you thing. It's just kind of a biological thing.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.